Kevin is waiting to talk with you. Call 781-837-4900. Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, 95.9 WATD.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And we want to thank Holly for being our guest. And we move right along. And joining us is a gentleman who has done a lot of work in his first term as state treasurer. And we're going to talk about some of the things that he has been working on. None other than the state treasurer, Steve Grossman. Mr. Grossman, how are you?
Kevin, couldn't be happier to be back with you. I had a great day today. I was down in Marshfield and Hanover all morning. And a wonderful day today.
It was a warm day today, though.
It was a warm day, but, you know, honestly, you know, in the middle of winter, I say, I can't wait for it to be 90, 95 degrees.
Yeah.
So when I get a day like today, no complaints from me.
Did you happen to grab any ice cream when you were down in Marshfield?
No, I didn't. It was a big discussion about whether or not, once I went over to the Y, I took a tour of that amazing South Shore Y in Hanover. I mean, that is a magnificent place. I don't think I've ever seen a more impressive Y. I mean, I saw kids doing drama, doing theater, doing crafts. It was just a really an uplifting hour that I spent over there with my friend Caitlin Kavanaugh from Hanover, who runs the camp.
I have to ask you: do you have a special map? Whether it's something that's laid out, or is it all? Do you have it all committed to memory as to where all the best ice cream spots are?
Well, we've got a map, but today I was told that I had to go to Dairy Twist in Pembroke. Isn't that where it is, Pembroke?
Yes. Favorite place, right?
That is great.
So I didn't get there because I was in Hanover, and I would have had to backtrack. And then, of course, Josh Cutler said, you haven't been to Farfars? You haven't lived until you've been over to Farfars in Duxbury. So
that's also true.
That is true.
Yep.
He's right.
So
true.
I got to neither place today, but I did come into the office, and because I was so excited about ice cream on a hot day, I dug into a half gallon of hand-packed Brigham's Mocha Almond, which Peter over at the old Brigham's on Beale Street, which is now changing its name because Brigham stopped making hand-packed. So I had Mocha Almond today, a couple of cups full, and so it was not a bad day.
Well, definitely.
Now I'm over at the Quincy Elks because the Elks Scholarship Night is tonight. We're going to present scholarships to a bunch of deserving young people who are graduating and off to college and off to wonderful careers. I mean, that's the future of this Commonwealth, is the young people we're educating. So scholarship night is always a highlight for me.
Well, we definitely want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us about some of the things, some of the initiatives that you and your office have been working on. And we should probably get right down to the nuts and bolts of some of the stuff that you have been working on. I think one of the topics that we have been having repeatedly on this show, we've had a number of folks who have weighed in. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, we had Suzanne Bump, who is the state auditor, on. She was talking about the report that she had put together in regards to what's going on with the welfare system, with EBT.
Right.
We also had Ms. Stacey Monahan, who is the interim coordinator for the DTA. She was on, and we talked with her. I know one of the things that you're looking at, or that you have talked about, you've put out a press release, is in regards to the technology for EBT cards. Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, sure. Well, I actually oversee the contract. In other words, every 7 years, and this is the seventh year, we go out to bid on transitional assistance and the whole EBT card system. And so when it was ready to go out to bid, I insisted that we write into the specifications that we wanted to look at and we wanted to know about all of the new technologies that could be built into the system, because if we could improve the technology, then we could use technology to a greater extent than ever before to deal with the waste, the fraud, the abuse, whatever has been part of this program, which has been so controversial. Look, I'm the last guy in the world who's going to tell anybody who truly needs help, who truly needs food stamps and cash assistance, that they shouldn't have it. We're a Commonwealth. We're a humane society. People need help, and if they need that help legitimately, they should have it. But if technology can be used more effectively than ever before, I've said that I'm not going to sign off on the new contract unless it protects the taxpayers to a a greater extent than ever before against the waste, fraud, and abuse that takes place. I've seen the technology. It's extremely impressive. Mm. You and I both know that technology is only good as the people who manage it
sure.
and oversee it. You've read what Suzanne Bump has to say. So I'm hopeful that the Department of Transitional Assistance, with the benefit of this new technology, once it's been approved, once it's been implemented, will use it as aggressively and appropriately as possible so that we potentially don't waste a dime of taxpayers' money. That's federal money and state money both. That's our job, and that's why I ran for state treasurer, to protect the taxpayer dollar.
If I could ask Treasurer, could you give us a couple of examples of some of the technology and some of the uses that would be implemented by Xerox with the new EBT cards?
Sure. For example, let's assume that you, with the new technology, you can see on a map electronically that a person with a card uses the card to buy $100 worth of groceries at 2 in the afternoon, $100 worth of groceries at 2:30, and another $100 worth of groceries at 3:30 in the afternoon. They've used it three times in one afternoon. Well, you can see on a map the exact stores where they bought these groceries, and you know that that's unusual behavior. People don't need to buy groceries three times in the same day. And you can map that out, and you can see whether or not the store may have traded the EBT card benefits, the food stamp benefits, for cash at a discount, which is fraudulent, fraudulent by both the holder of the card and fraudulent on the part of the store. And you can come down like a ton of bricks very quickly on stores that engage in that behavior. I'll give you a second example. In Suzanne Bump's report, there were something like 9,800 people who had been issued 14 or more cards between 2006 and 2013. Let me ask you a question. How many times in your life have you lost a credit card? More or less, roughly.
Maybe once.
Yeah,
but I'm usually frantic enough to find it, or somebody has found it. Once I lost it, and I did all the right things. But
exactly. And that's probably the same thing for me and for most of your listeners. We all lose a card once in a long while. It falls out. We leave it behind, and it gets lost. Okay, so we call up the number on the back. We cancel it out. We get a new card. It's a little inconvenient, but we follow the rules. So if you found out that somebody had a card and that they had 14 cards issued to them over a seven-year period, wouldn't you think that was a little bit unusual, a little strange, a little bit sort of beyond what the rules should allow? Well, so here's the point. If there are close to 10,000 people who have been doing that, and you can monitor that behavior to a greater extent than ever before using better technology, it seems to me then you can bring those people in, come down on like a ton of bricks, and say, you know something? This is not okay, and we are not going to issue you another card, or we're going to charge you more for the second and the third and the fourth card, which they now do with the transitional assistance. Point being, there are new technologies that can be used to tell stores who engage in fraudulent behavior, you do it anymore, you're going to lose your license, you're going to be prosecuted by the law to the full extent, and that goes to the holders of the cards. People need food, they need cash benefits, fine. I have no problem with that. None of us should have a problem with that. But let's come down like a ton of bricks on people who fool around with the system, mess around with taxpayer dollars. That can't happen any longer. And the new technology that I've seen, data warehousing, data mining, new techniques of massaging and using data in the right hands with the right people, can have a very, very significant impact and reduce fraud and reduce the misuse of taxpayers' money.
Treasurer, you know, there was a plan that was recommended in the report from the auditor to be implemented in the transitional assistance department. Some of those steps have been taken on immediately, and some of them are forthcoming. I think there's a 100-day plan that's out there right now to implement them slowly.
Right.
Are you happy so far with some of the stuff that's going on in terms of changing and implementing these different recommendations?
You know, my father always said, you don't answer a question for which you don't know the answer. I'm not close enough to every day at Department of Transitional Assistance. I don't oversee DTA. Mm. We oversee the procurement of the contract. Once the contract is signed and everything is exactly the way it should be, our responsibilities are pretty much over. But I did read today in the Boston Globe, there was an editorial, and it did say that there had been some significant improvements, even in the short term, in terms of reining in some of these past egregious and that's the only word I can think of, egregious behaviors. So I believe that Stacey Monahan and the team over there are working very hard to implement this plan and to use the tools they have available and presumably to use the new tools. So I can't say what has and hasn't happened, but I know that this was, by the definition of anybody watching, this was a crisis of confidence in the entire system. When you have a crisis of confidence, you've got to put some work in to make sure that the problem is fixed and fixed quickly. So I accept the fact that the Globe today at least pointed some examples of the reduction of fraudulent behavior. I believe that the new technology will improve that. That's the contribution that will be made by virtue of this new contract. I won't sign off on it unless I'm certain that it can be implemented. But it's up to human beings, better trained, better educated, and additional personnel to make sure that we treat every dime of taxpayers' money. And whether the money is from the federal government or not, federal resources or state resources, doesn't matter. It's all taxpayers' money. Look, the reason I put the checkbook online, the state's checkbook online, when I was first elected in the first year was because I thought it was important to send a message to the taxpayers of Massachusetts. You pay the bills. Every dime you pay for, therefore, you're entitled to know how every dime is being spent. And if there's more transparency, more accountability, and more toughness consistent with being humane in this humane society, this commonwealth of ours, then I think we strike the right balance, the right formula, and the process will work much more effectively. I think they're on that pathway. We hope to make a contribution in terms of putting them there.
Let's go from talking about the welfare reform and some of the securities that are going to be put in by Xerox to talking about how people are paid in this state. I believe that just a couple of weeks ago, you were actually calling for maybe an increase in the state's minimum wage. Give me your thoughts on calling for that and how you think that might be a benefit to some of the residents in the state.
Well, the minimum wage hasn't been increased since 2008, $8 an hour. There are a number of bills out there. I haven't weighed in specifically on any particular bill, only that I think it would be appropriate to increase the minimum wage. We haven't kept pace for minimum wage workers with inflation. And I recognize in recommending an increase in the minimum wage that those who are in the retail sector of the economy will disagree. And we can have disagreements about policy. I do think that the Senate president was right when she testified a week or 10 days ago that when we pay people barely more than $16,000 a year, that they can't make it in Massachusetts. Very few people can make it in Massachusetts making minimum wage. So they are forced to fall back on public benefits and public assistance. So one way or the other, if people are at minimum wage, we're paying some significant portion of our taxpayer dollars to help those people. So I'd like to see people consistent with their workforce training and their educational background and skills to be able to improve modestly their compensation. I don't think it's going to undermine our economy. I recognize that it'll cost some people some more money. And, to those people who would call up and say, you know, there they go again, increasing the minimum wage, making it more difficult to be competitive, I would, to some extent, tongue-in-cheek, quote the former mayor of New York City, Ed Koch, who, when he died, I read that he said once, if you agree with me on 8 out of 12 issues, vote for me. But if you agree with me on 12 out of 12 issues, see a psychiatrist.
I guess I would throw this out there. Maybe folks, they don't realize that 3 years ago that, you know, that you were a guy who was running as someone who you know, has operated a business. You understand it. And if anything, I believe that, would it be fair to say that you paid your employees a competitive wage?
Yeah, look, our business started 103 years ago. My grandfather started it, fourth generation. My two sons run the business. After I decided to run, I gave up the presidency of the company. You know, we've never had a problem with our workers. We believe that paying premium wages for superior performance creates a win-win for everybody. The workers benefit, the company benefits, the customers benefit. It's a win-win-win across the board. So, you know, we don't pay close to minimum wage. In fact, our wages at our company used to be something close to 30% more than many of our competitors. And some people would say, how can you afford to do that? And my answer is, try craftsmanship, try longevity, try loyalty, try all the qualities that you would want in a workforce. The average tenure of the people in the production team at our company when I left was almost 25 years. They were superior workers. So that's a different, that's precision manufacturing. That's craftsmanship. Minimum wage are people who may not have any particular set of job skills, unfortunately. So they're working in a retail environment, trying to make ends meet, and the retailer is also trying to make ends meet. And the retailer is going to have to pay more money, and that could put that retailer in a place where they would have to spend more money, and that's a challenge for that person. I'm trying to find a balance between the needs of those who work and those who struggle to keep their head above water, and those businesses that are struggling every day to pay for insurance, to pay for phones, to pay for the internet, and to realize enough income so that they can make a profit and keep their company going and hopefully hire some more people, because the backbone of our economy is small business, and I never forget that. 36 years in business, I think my record is pretty clear that the small business sector of the economy is the backbone, and it's what I spend most of my time working on, particularly through the small business banking partnership that we were privileged to create when I became treasurer 2 years ago.
If you could, you know, kind of, it's a nice little segue. Just last week was National Small Business Week, and you had a chance to kind of talk about the impact that you have had as far as working with small businesses, especially with the banking partnership that you've helped forge. And I believe that you've put a little more than $300 million into, what, about 52 community banks statewide?
Yeah, when I became treasurer, I asked, where are the state's reserve deposits? Your money, my money, the money of everybody who's listening. Reserve deposits that we don't use every day. And I found that 60% of that money was in Europe, Australia, and Asia, chasing a little bit higher yield. And I said, something's wrong. There's a fundamental principle. Massachusetts taxpayers' money should be in Massachusetts banks to be loaned to Massachusetts small businesses that are creditworthy to create jobs right here. And so we've moved $317 million into 52 banks. They, in turn, have helped to create almost 5,000 new loans with a value of over $700 million. And there have been some banks on the South Shore that have been warriors: Rockland Trust, South Coastal Bank, South Shore Savings Bank, just to mention three, and I haven't mentioned them all, but 52 of them, more than one-third of the banks in the state. And all they have to do is give us a competitive interest rate on the money, loan the money to small businesses. We try to provide some additional resources to women-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses, and businesses that are owned by veterans. There are no quotas at all in the program, but we'd like to see the money spread around a little bit, although the banks are the ones who make the decisions. And every 90 days, they have to put up on a website how many new loans they generated and how many dollars. So in other words, we make sure that they're accountable to the taxpayers for every dime. So there's no taxpayer subsidy at all in this program, and it's created a lot of jobs, a lot of economic activity, and a lot of very happy small business people who have been empowered by this program. You know, it's not that complicated. I had a bank that I did business with when I was in business. I grew because a bank loaned me money. So it's just common sense for me to say, hey, if I could borrow money, how about everybody else? And what is that money doing in Europe, Australia, and Asia? Bring the damn money back, put it in the local banks, and let the private sector explode in terms of innovation. In Massachusetts, we can never stop innovating. That's my biggest lesson. Massachusetts should always be a laboratory for experimentation and innovation. New techniques, new tools of educating people, of training people, of growing businesses, on reducing costs, and on protecting taxpayers' money. What I've tried to do for 2.5 years, and, you know, as is likely, as I've said many times, that I'll run for governor in 2014, that's the message I will convey to the people of this Commonwealth across the state over the next 18 months.
So, you know, I think you might have anticipated my next question. I was going to ask you, I mean, you have done such a tremendous job as our state treasurer. Do you see yourself seeking out 4 more years to kind of keep a watch over our money and having these new programs put in place to help? I mean, whether it's working with small banks or putting protections on EBT cards so they don't just go missing. Are you looking at possibly running for governor in 2014, or is that something that you're still, it's pending?
I'm leaning strong in that direction with an election that's going to be held tomorrow. I thought it was inappropriate to do anything on my own campaign-wise formally until the election was over. But let me just, if I do run for governor, and I'm leaning strongly in that direction. Let me just define for you very quickly what I think the job of governor is all about.
Okay.
And this comes from my background in business, in nonprofit, in politics, and running the treasury. The governor is the chief executive of the state, and the job of the chief executive is to lay out a vision for the Commonwealth that leaves no one behind, to discuss in a common sense way, in a straightforward way, the challenges and opportunities we face, to work through and to come up with some common sense solutions that can make a difference in the lives of everybody in the Commonwealth, no matter where they live, to build a great team of the best people to go ahead and implement these ideas, and then to be held accountable every day by the people of the Commonwealth, the voters, and by you and the media. And I welcome that. Some people don't like scrutiny. They don't want to be, to be held accountable. I think every single day I get up as a public official and I expect to be held accountable by the people who voted for me, by the people who didn't vote for me but are still citizens who pay taxes, and by you folks in the media whose job it is to hold us accountable and to point out wrongdoing when wrongdoing takes place.
Well, State Treasurer Grossman, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We would love to have you maybe back on in about 3 weeks because we had a bunch of stuff we didn't get a chance to talk about. And I would like to cordially invite you maybe sometime in July to come back on. Is that possible?
Absolutely. I'd love to come back. And if you invite me sometime to come in studio, that'll be my opportunity to go over to one of those great ice cream places that I never got to today and to have some ice cream and finally make it to Farfar's. I've been told it's sort of like the promised land of ice cream, even though it's a different kind of ice cream. So that may be just Josh Cutler talking, but I'm happy to go over and try it out and do a little taste test with everybody, okay?
I'll do you one better. I'll make sure it's here in studio. You can still go over there if you want to check out the surroundings, but if you show up here in studio, I'll make sure your favorite flavor's right here.
You're on. Let's do it in July. I look forward to it. Have a wonderful 4th of July holiday, the weekend after next, and my best to all my friends at WATD.
You have a great day, State Treasurer.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
It's the State Treasurer, Steve Grossman, joining us, and he kind of gave us a little bit of insight as to what to watch for, if in fact he will run for governor in 2014. Very cool.